Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program as we come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We are streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we also link to our guests' websites. I would say 99.9% of the time, they have a website, and we have access to that, and we make that available to you so that you can do some further study and research and investigation and basically come to your own conclusions. That's really what we're doing, is just putting the information out there for you to make up your own mind. Today is an interesting day because we're going to talk about what you might consider to be a new philosophy in the world. But then again, everything that is new is old, and vice versa. Some might say it's just repackaged. And in a way, you know, that's okay, because the old packages aren't working so well. I think that the names of those various philosophies, if you will, you can call them religions, spiritual practices, carry a lot of baggage, negative energy with them because of their, if you will, historical roots. That's one aspect of it. We're going to find out a little bit about this new philosophy. I don't want to use the word religion because we're going to be talking with not so much the founder, Ryuho Okawa, but we're going to be talking with Stephen Billingham. And he is, how can I say this, Stephen, sort of a representative, if you will, of what is referred to as the happy science. Is that correct?
It is correct, and I'd say, look, a representative, a follower, a disciple, an ardent believer, you could say, all of those things. But thanks for such a great intro, and thanks for having me on the program, Richard. It's great to be able to come and share some of the ideas and thoughts that exist within Happy Science. Thanks very much for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. Now, Okawa and his, I say his philosophy, really isn't new information. I mean, when you go back and research most of the religions, spiritual practices and teachings, and as a matter of fact, does he not also consider himself what, the new Buddha, something of that effect?
Exactly. And look, just what you said about before about the repackaging or previous religions, This is the main idea in Happy Science, is that truth is eternal. The truth that was taught in the true religions such as Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Confucianism, and Taoism, and even religions that existed beyond that, they actually all come from the same source. And the book that today we're going to talk a little bit about, called The Laws of the Sun, its subtitle is One Source, One Planet, One People. And what Happy Science is aiming to do through this teaching and through The Laws of the Sun is to show people what is the essence that's contained in these teachings, these ancient teachings, as you mentioned, 2,000 years old or 2,500 years old. And maybe these old teachings, they don't really give the answers to our modern society. 2,500 years ago, when Buddha was on the earth, there were the economics and the politics that exist in the world today. So we really need a teaching that also embodies the politics and economics, and so we can understand more fully what is the heart of the teachings or of the truth that was taught by these great people such as Jesus, Buddha, Moses in the past. And that's what Happy Science aims to do, yeah.
Well, now, isn't this, again, repackaging all of these philosophies down into one in that context?
Actually, you know what, and as you just, sorry, just to go back to something you said, sure, about Master Okawa, being the modern Buddha or the new Buddha, mm-hmm, yeah, he teaches that definitely all of us as human beings go through a cycle of reincarnation, and that's a teaching in Buddhism of the past, mm-hmm, and so he teaches that all of us as human beings have been reincarnating between what he calls the real world, or the spirit world, and this world, and that this world is a training ground for the soul. But just as we reincarnate as human beings, and actually the more advanced the soul, he does teach that the longer the gap between the reincarnations. So the average time frame between a reincarnation of an average soul would be 300 or 400 years. So what he would teach is that you know, we will live in the real world, the world of thought, the world of the mind, the spirit world. We'd live there for 300 or 400 years. And then after that period of time, we would feel a yearning that we want to go do some more soul training, that we need to learn some more lessons, and our karma that we've created from past lives would draw us back to a specific environment that we need to experience that will give us the further growth of the soul. And it's actually the progress of the soul that makes us feel happy, essentially, you know. So based on this idea of reincarnation of each one of us, he teaches also the Buddha himself, who incarnated 2,500 years ago, also reincarnates periodically. But as I said, the more evolved the soul, the longer the gap between the incarnation. The Buddha consciousness might incarnate around about every 2,500 years or so. And it's been 2,500 years, and the teachings of Buddhism have even though they're still there in many ways, they're misunderstood. And as I said before, they're not really applicable or understood in politics and economics. So the time came to create a universal truth, a new teaching, which is still containing the essence of the teachings of the past, but put in a new way for modern language and modern people.
And I would probably hazard a guess that it is devoid of a lot of the rules and regulations or dogma and doctrine of many of these other, philosophies or religious practices.
Sure, absolutely. Look, the main thing is he's trying to teach us what are the universal laws, you know. And at the very heart of it all, at the heart of his teaching, there is the teaching of the law of cause and effect. A good cause yields a good result, a bad cause yields a bad result. And what he teaches are these past rules that might be set up, like, for instance, from Moses' time with the Ten Commandments and things like that, which people, you know, after a while, people maybe twist rules or they misunderstand rules. And, you know, essentially a person might not be living a sort of a religious or spiritual life, but still thinking that they're following the rules. So instead of that, to make it much easier to understand, what Master Okawa teaches is something that he calls exploration of the right mind. And he teaches that right mind would be the mind of God or Buddha. And as we come to understand this, well, you know, this requires wisdom, because as I said a second ago, that, you know, the law of cause and effect says a good cause will yield a good result and a bad cause will yield a bad result. But what is a good cause? What is a bad cause? You know, how can I distinguish the difference? And to understand that requires wisdom. And so that's what we're trying to really do, is to understand deeply the law of cause and effect. And if we understand the law of cause and effect, you know, one way of looking at it, people talk of karma, and often they think of, oh, you have to avoid bad karma. You know, something's happened, oh, it must be bad karma. But let's turn this around the other way. There's also good karma. And instead of just trying to stop producing bad karma, if we understand the laws of karma, why don't we try to produce as much good karma in our lives as possible? It's like a, you know, from an economic point of view, you know, you could be a person that stops losing money and going backwards in your life, and then you might be able to make small savings. But instead of that, everybody wants to be wealthy. Well, as far as I know, most people want to be wealthy, mm-hmm. and they would like to accumulate as much monetary wealth as possible. But we're talking, there's the opportunity to create spiritual wealth. You know, so if we can create good causes in life, if we can look at how we can create as much good cause as possible, this turns out to be great merit or spiritual merit for us, which turns out to be good karma, which brings us, you know, nice things happening to our life now and in future lives.
I'd like to touch upon another area here, and I ask this question with all due respect. Why Okawa?
Sure.
Why was he chosen, or maybe a better question would be, how was he chosen to present this message? And I'm really kind of curious about that.
Yeah. No, look, that's a really good and honest question. And I can think of it, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, first of all, we exist, as I said, we exist in this before we come to this world. So it wasn't like he was born and then he was chosen.
Mm-hmm.
He actually existed as a, let me just go back a step. You know, as I said before, that we are all spiritual beings and that we reincarnate into this world from the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the teachings that is very clear in the teachings from Master Okawa and in the laws of the sun is the explanation about this multidimensional universe. So the spirit world itself, it's not like just an existence where there's black and white, and if you're good, you go to heaven, if you're bad, you go to hell, and that's it. It's all black and white. It's actually a very structured world. And so what he teaches is developmental stages of love or stages of enlightenment. So what he teaches is that all of us as souls exist in different realms once we leave this world, and these realms are completely dependent on the state of our mind or our level of enlightenment or the stage of love that we've reached. And, I mean, maybe later in the program, if we get a chance, we'll talk about exactly what these stages of love are, because it's quite clear and precise. And when we hear it, we can sometimes understand, I think I could be at this stage. But he teaches that, you know, just like a pyramid structure, at the bottom there's many more, and as we move up through the higher dimensions, there become less and less souls that have reached that stage. He teaches that the realm of the Savior, which is the ultimate realm of human consciousness, there exist these great souls, such as Jesus and Moses and Confucius. But he teaches at the very, very top of all of this is this one great soul, which in the past has been called God, or Allah, or I am that I am, when Moses spoke to the burning bush. So there is this one great consciousness who has the responsibility of this earth. And so what Master Okawa teaches is that actually he himself has been born from this great consciousness, which also was known in the past as Buddha. So if you look at the teachings in Buddhism, you'll see that Buddha said, you know, there is no one in heaven or on earth more higher or distinguished than myself. So Buddha never said, you know, for instance, in Christianity, Jesus spoke of our Father in heaven, and he said, when I speak, you know, Father speaks through me. He said, we should love God, you know. So Jesus always said that there was somebody beyond him that he was receiving the great revelations through, and somebody that we should have faith in. And Moses, of course, received revelations from someone above him, and Muhammad, of course, received revelations from Gabriel, who was receiving, you know, giving the teachings from Allah. So all of those three, if we think, look at it, they actually all receive revelations from someone. Whereas if you look at the teachings from Buddhism, Buddha just taught the law. Buddha didn't say, I'm receiving these revelations from someone higher than me and I'm giving them to you. Buddha just taught what he said was the truth or the law. So Master Okawa teaches that this consciousness, also known as Buddha in the past, he's been born from this consciousness. So it wasn't that he was born here and then he was given the role. He was actually born with the mission, and then woke up to his mission, and that's what he's aiming to fulfill through his work now.
And again, with the same respect for Mr. Okawa, what is, from your perspective, are you a follower of the teachings, are you a believer in the philosophy, or are you a follower of Master Okawa?
You know, that's a fantastic question too, Richard, because in the beginning, what attracted me was the teaching. You know, I found the Laws of the Sun in the library in New Zealand in 1994. And, you know, I'd been traveling for a couple of years, and I got home and I was seeking an answer to, I was 31 years old, what is the meaning of life? You know, what should I be doing? What's the purpose to all of this? And then I went to the Auckland Public Library, and when I saw this book, just a great feeling inside sort of made me take this book off the shelf. And when I started reading, I just found the philosophy in it so wonderful. So in the original stages, it was the teachings themselves were so logical, even though some of them were like so big and yet so like, wow, really? But actually everything was always explained so logically and so clearly. So for me, the original attraction was the teaching. But over time, because of his thoughts, words, and actions and the teachings themselves, I gained faith in Master Okawa to realize, well, he really is the Buddha. I mean, for instance, when I was in New Zealand, after reading the Laws of the Sun and then contacting the people in Japan and then receiving a whole lot of more books in English, such as The Rebirth of Buddha, well, I found in the book The Rebirth of Buddha, there was a passage that said that Buddha only descends to Earth every 2,500 years or so. When the Buddha is on Earth, there's nothing more important than actually having the chance to hear the words directly from Buddha and follow the teachings of Buddha. And that made sense to me. I thought, well, yeah, this is, if we reincarnate many, many times, maybe every 300 or 400 years, and then suddenly we have this life where we come across a living Buddha, could there be anything more important than actually trying to absorb these teachings, learn these teachings, maybe even witness the chance to see the Buddha? I mean, obviously now people look back and they talk of the Buddha, and people, many monks worship the Buddha, but, you know, this is from somebody who lived 2,500 years ago, and I'm thinking, well, I'm sure if they had the chance, they would want to see the Buddha and follow the Buddha. So in this book, when he said that, nothing's more important than following the Buddha when the Buddha's on earth, you should throw away everything else for the opportunity to follow the Buddha's teachings. That's really was, because the teachings were so clear and so wonderful, that's when I decided to sell up my stuff and go to Japan and see for myself. So to answer your question, it started with a faith in the teachings because of the quality of the teachings. Then over time, I realized that, as Master says, the teachings, the Buddha and the teachings are actually one. you know, ultimately, the Buddha and Dharma, or Buddha and his teachings, are one and the same. So as much as I love the teachings, I also love Master Okawa because, you know, he's the source of those teachings.
Well, as having been a Baha'i for about a year and a half in my mid-30s,
yeah.
One of the wonderful philosophies or comments by the founder of the faith, Baha'u'llah, was that if you accept one of the messengers of God, you accept them all. If you reject one of the messengers of God, you reject them all. You can't
there's
have it both ways, basically. What I'm curious about, and I do want to get into some of these other elements, especially the levels of love. What I'm curious about is both, and again, I'm going to use the word philosophy as well as the founder, Master Okawa.
Yes.
Is this the latest and greatest, and this is the only path? How does this, and how does Master Okawa and his role in a physical form as far as the, shall we say, representative of this philosophy, where does he see himself in terms of what we've done to the founders of the other faith? We deified Jesus, we deified Muhammad, we deified Moses, and some even Adam, who they do consider to be, you know, one of the messengers as well. I mean, all of the great avatars and sages, you know, instead of focusing on the message, we focus on the messenger, who is probably the least relevant of the whole thing. Because if we're not living the philosophy, if we're not living that love life, who cares who you're following?
Yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, I absolutely respect the founders, of course, because based on this idea of the, you know, the structure of the spirit world and the highly evolved souls, these great saviors are such, you know, enlightened beings, the Master said, and the laws of the sun, actually, because of their such high spirits, every one of them could be seen as like they're a representative of God, you know. So in that regard, yeah, we should absolutely respect them. But yeah, also, I believe what you're saying there about, yeah, we should be looking for the message and aiming to understand the message and apply the message to our own lives. Because essentially, I think one at the heart of all of these religions, there's two things to it. One is that they're trying to teach each one of us how to live fulfilling lives, happy lives, meaningful lives based on the truth of why we're here and what we are as human beings. But the second part about it is all of them are trying to teach us how to get along together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I want to be successful, but my success shouldn't cause other people to become unhappy. My success should lead to the happiness of other people. And I think this is the heart of religion. It's trying to teach people how, as an individual, you yourself can create success and happiness in your life that actually adds to the success and happiness of the people around you. And therefore, we create, in Buddhism, it's called Buddha Land, Utopia, or in Christianity, Kingdom of Heaven on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the goal. So if each one of us, it's not a competition anymore. It's actually about each one of us trying to refine ourselves, develop ourselves, create the highest level of enlightenment for ourselves, but our own enlightenment, our own happiness should lead to the happiness and well-being of all the people in the society. And that should be our goal, to create the most magnificent earth altogether, this wonderful, splendid planet where people are living not in poverty, no, there's equal opportunity. Now, I will say something about Master's teachings that is fantastic, this idea of equality. I know in America there's the big idea of equality, but he also teaches about equality and fair judgment. So the idea that actually you should be judged on the efforts you make as well. You know, so, or how an enlightened being, for instance, should be judged by how far down the path they've walked. So we have equality because we have divine nature. We have equality is because we all have the potential to attain enlightenment. We all have the potential eventually to become a Buddha, a potential to become, you know, as high as Jesus, or Jesus ourselves. We all have that potential. We have that seed within us, the seed of God. But different people have made different amounts of effort over time. And so some have gone further than others. So we should have fair judgment and recognize the efforts that people have made and the results that they've achieved. And so this is where equality and fair judgment should be, you know, put side by side and seen together.
Well, I know that in my lifetime, I have become aware of, primarily through news and information in that regard, individuals who have taken it upon themselves to be the leader of a particular group espousing a particular philosophy that unfortunately and very sadly ended not only in their demise, but in the demise of many of the followers. And yeah. I know that that is still a huge concern for a lot of people because they don't want to get involved or connected with something that in the long run might be more harmful than it is helpful. So, you know, that's and this being something on the, as I said before, on the one hand, relatively new and yet not so new because, I mean, you you can see, I mean, it's pretty evident. You can see the trappings, if you will, the thread, I should use the word thread, that runs through the happy science from all of the other religions. It's it is there.
This is one of the challenges that we face, is that people have a religion. The word religion, as you mentioned at the beginning of the program, religion has such a bad rap. The word
highly
religion,
charged,
you know what?
Energetic.
So back in New Zealand, you know, I actually run the Happy Science office in New Zealand, and I've also worked in Australia as, there as well. But you know, in the early days, you know what I used to say, Richard, was to try to soften it. I used to say, we're a spiritual movement. Mm-hmm. You know, spiritual movement. People like that sound. Sounds so good. But ultimately, I remember hearing Master Okawa teaching about or talking about religion and what is religion. And he said, in its true form, religion is the most beautiful thing there is on this earth. Religion takes people from where they are now closer to God. That's mm-hmm. the meaning and purpose of religion. Just as economics should teach us how to be able to run an economy, politics should teach us how to run, you know, politics and create an environment that people can live in happily. So each politics and economics, they have their purpose. But he taught religion. The purpose of religion was to take human beings from where they were now and take them closer to God. So it was the most splendid thing there actually was. And there was another thing he said was that, you know, if you have your ideal and you have reality, if your reality doesn't match your ideal, change reality, right? So instead of changing, and I realized that by saying, we're a spiritual movement, what I was doing was instead of trying to approach the ideal, which would be to everybody to have a positive view of religion again, instead of that, I was sort of, by saying it's a spiritual movement, I was more like, you know, moving down and lowering my ideal. So I decided to change and instead try to explain to people what is the true meaning of religion and what really religion was all about. And let's not get caught up and believe that some of these false teachers, as you mentioned, people have come and done more harm than good, that let's not say that actually they're part of religion. They're deceitful, just as the same as a person in business who runs a good business and employs thousands of people and produces a good product and makes everybody happy. We can't say that they're the same as a person who's a rip-off merchant, who's stealing from people and robbing people and causing unhappiness. They're absolutely different. And we don't say, well, business is bad because there's a few bad apples that have done a few bad things. We still believe that business can be a good thing. So we should recognize religion really for what it is and say, hang on, let's look for what's the difference between a true religion and a false religion. What look for what a teacher is saying and then decide what he's saying is the truth or not. And I know that's not always easy because people have been deceived in the past. And one point on that, Master Okawa himself teaches that that is the worst of all the sins that can be committed. The very worst sin is for someone to spread false ideologies or spread false teachings and create believers that lead them away from the truth. Mm-hmm. Since essentially God just wants us, or Buddha just wants us to move on this path of evolution of the soul, closer and closer back to God, that's God's most strongest wish for all of us. If anybody comes along and actually takes people away from that truth, that's actually the greatest sin, even greater than murder, theft, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Steve Billingham is my guest, and we are talking about we'll call it the new philosophy, the new spiritual movement, happy science. We're talking also about the founder master, Ryuho Okawa, and we're also talking about the laws of the sun. We'll talk about that and our source, our planet, and our one source, one planet and one people when we come back here on Tell Me Your Story. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking with Steve Billingham of Happy Science, and it is the new spiritual movement that we're talking about, as well as some of the writings of its founder, Master Ryuho Okawa. And one of the books is called The Laws of the Sun, and it is One Source, One Planet, One People, which, again, I can't help but be thrown back to, you know, what I was taught and what I actually read from the Baha'i writings about how when we first went into orbit around the Earth in our space program, it confirmed one of the other phrases or writings that there are no borders. I mean, where were the dividing lines amongst the states in this country or amongst the countries in Africa, Asia, Europe, North and South America? There were none, and because there are none. And it's you know, it's one of those things that kind of comes to mind. Now, we want to talk a little bit here about the whole aspect, the levels of love, which brings to mind something else that I find rather interesting from First Corinthians about love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others, and so on and so forth. It goes through and continues to say what it is and what it isn't to help people to understand more so. And I have to say that I actually was kind of joking around a little bit many, many years ago when I worked for a religious radio station. And I used to say that, you know, if the people of that day had gotten Jesus' message the first time, Paul and all the others would not have had to written the rest of what has become the New Testament. You know, they didn't get it. And so these other writings came about and so forth. And I suppose there is maybe there's a certain element of truth in that today. Here we are in the 21st century in regards to the happy science that people haven't gotten it. And not because it hasn't been there, but for whatever reason, the old packaging, it ain't working.
Look, and I think that just what you really touched on a really, I think, an important point is that when Jesus was on the earth 2,000 years ago, I mean, look at Christianity now. It's huge. I mean, maybe, 2 billion followers or something around the world, or believers around the world now still. And you know, this is 2,000 years later. So it's obvious, and we can look at the teachings in the Bible, and there is some wonderful truth in those teachings and the teachings about love that you were just mentioning. But you know what? We can look back and recognize that 2,000 years ago when Jesus was on earth, people didn't suddenly wake up and say, hey, yeah, this guy's great. His teachings are great. He really is this Son of God. I mean, they killed him on the cross after just 3 years of teaching. And it was only 200 years or so later that actually people turned to realize that, wow, this person may have been a savior or, you know, a great teacher after all. And this happens over and over and over again. I mean, look at Socrates, right, made to take poison. And we can see that this happened over and over and over again, that the people, when the great teachers come to the earth with these teachings of love, with these teachings of truth, people of the times don't believe it. And I think that was one of the things when I came across the teachings of Happy Science and Master Okawa, I thought, I'm going to keep an open mind. And if this person really is the teaching of today, the teacher of today, to bring a universal teaching for all of us, I don't want to miss it. I don't want to be one of those people who, you know, later in hindsight say, wow, he really was a teacher. I had such a great opportunity there. And I think that was part of the reason why I was really wanting to and willing to look so deeply into his teachings. And I remember one day in one of his lectures, Master Okawa was talking about that, you know, people often want to see miracles. There are many miracles in the time of Jesus. And people think, well, if you could show me a miracle, then I would believe. But then actually the problem is then people start to concentrate on the miracles. I mean, if I could actually, for instance, use psychic abilities to be able to lift chairs up and 10 feet in the air and then throw them across the room, I could go downtown in New York here or anywhere else in the world and I'd get huge audiences of people gathering around to watch me and they'd all be amazed and they'd all want to know how to do it. But, you know, it actually then people get distracted by the miracles. People then want to be able to create the miracle. But what's taught in Happy Science, the most important thing is the state of your mind. How are your thoughts? What sort of personality, what sort of character have you created? Is your mind full of love and compassion, or is your mind full of greed and anger? This is the most important thing, the teaching of the mind. So, you know, Master Okawa, then somebody said, so would you be, you know, performing miracles? He said, well, and he explained this idea about, you know, why miracles aren't such a good idea, because people get distracted. And then he finished it up in such a beautiful way. He said, but if you want to see a miracle, and everyone's waiting, saying, oh, yeah, okay. And he said, study my teachings. Put them into practice, see what happens in your life. And that's the ultimate answer to, you know, if you really want to see miracles, through following a way of truth, by understanding the laws of the universe and putting them into practice, our lives can really change. Yeah. So I think it's the same thing from all the teachers of the past. If people were actually willing to listen to their message and maybe put it into practice and see what happened before they judged whether the person was a right person or wrong person, a right teacher or not a teacher, I think then they would know. And what you said before about those your ideas of love and the teachings that you had from the Baha'i faith about love, mm-hmm. you see, even they're not coming from happy science, but immediately I resonate with those words that you said when you described about love. You know, my soul inside felt like, yeah, that's true. All those things about love was true. So I think if we trust ourselves and trust our inner self, we can actually feel whether something's in line with the truth or if it's away from the truth. And essentially, if something's going to create happiness for myself and happiness for other people, then it's probably truth. But if somebody's telling me something that's going to bring me happiness, but it's actually going to cause suffering or discomfort or problems for other people, it's probably not truth.
Yeah.
So the real first point that we should look at is, if I follow this way, is this going to bring happiness to me and other people as well? Is it not going to cause unhappiness to others? That's a key thing.
Absolutely. You know, and it actually raises another interesting observation on my part. We here in central Southern California and some of the other Western states, of course, we're experiencing this long, drawn-out drought. You know, we haven't been getting the kinds of rain to fill the reservoirs yep. and have plenty of drinking water and to be able to wash our clothes and all this kind of thing. And yep. There are those who somewhere else around the world, they're getting an abundance, overabundance of rain. And it's one of those paradoxes that a lot of folks don't seem to understand that, okay, yes, we certainly could use the rain, but we'd like to get it in moderate doses. We don't want to get dumped on and have our drought solved in 10 minutes. But the other aspect of it is, if we are getting the rains here along the coast and inland a ways, someone else is suffering from drought elsewhere right. in the world. I mean, it's like it can't be raining everywhere on the planet at the same time.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just that's not the way the cycles work. So I find that real interesting. And it brings to mind also, I was curious, because you were when you were talking about miracles, the biblical passage came to me about casting your bread upon the water. And if I'm remembering correctly, I'm paraphrasing here, you cast your bread upon the water and it'll return to you a thousandfold, that kind of thing. And a lot of people interpret that as, you know, sort of tithing, you know, giving right. or just giving to others, helping others and so forth, and it'll mm-hmm. return to you. And my observation of that is that, well, okay, that is true, but it's going to happen whether you think about it or not, because it's a natural law of the universe. It
That's
just
right.
happens. And that there is yep. always an exchange, whether yep. you actively or passively participate in it.
That's right. And that's, you know, and then this is what requires the wisdom to understand, am I sowing a good cause or a bad
yes,
cause? I mean, Buddhism and Christianity
yes.
taught the same thing. Buddha with the idea of karma and Christianity with as you sow, so shall you reap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the same idea. So to have the wisdom, though, I mean, you know, as a real simple example, I could think it would be love to give my children lollipops because they're asking for lollipops and it seems to make them happy.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, at the end of the day, it makes their teeth fall out if I keep giving them lollipops, right,
yeah.
without actually making sure they brush their teeth afterwards as well. So sometimes just because it makes somebody happy doesn't necessarily mean that it's actually true love or a good cause.
Exactly.
And it really requires wisdom and a deep understanding. But that's why, you know, we really teach in Happy Science that we should make an effort to learn what is the truth. Now, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about this now, but Master Okawa
yeah.
gives us a path to happiness.
Yeah.
And it's called a fourfold path.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the fourfold path is love, wisdom, self-reflection, and progress. So just as traditional Buddha 2,500 years ago, he gave the eightfold path. And he taught that as the path to human perfection. I mean, that was right seeing, right thought, right speech, right action, right living, right effort, right will, and right meditation. And he taught that each one of them was a stage to go through to refine your character. And at the end of it all, you could enter a state of right emancipation, which means you freed yourself from all the suffering of the world and enter into a state of nirvana in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So the Eightfold Path is still contained within the teachings of Happy Science, since you know, Master Okawa is originally, you know, the Buddha. But with a modern way, with this Fourfold Path, of love, wisdom, self-reflection and progress, the Eightfold Path is contained within the self-reflection part, you know, to make sure that we're seeing correctly and we're thinking correctly and we're speaking correctly. So it's still contained, but it's contained as part of the Fourfold Path. But very simply, the Fourfold Path of love means the practice of making sure that you're giving love without expecting anything back. And this is the biggest cause of suffering in the world today, people's misunderstanding of love. You know, people think that love, people want to receive love. Everybody wants to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
But if everybody's wanting love and nobody's giving love, who are they going to receive the love from?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the wonderful thing that Master Okawa teaches is that the essence of love is giving. And when you give love purely without any attachments or expectations, you can feel a certain joy in your heart. And the reason this is, like you said before, everything has a reason, there's a cause. Well, the reason we feel it is that essentially God is love. And that the whole universe is filled with this energy called love. And the moment that I actually feel love for another person, I'm experiencing love. That is love. The moment that, you know, for instance, we've all got somebody that we love. And if we think deeply about that person, and in our heart we start to feel a warmth towards that person, that is love itself. And that feeling of warmth and well-being in the heart is a feeling of love. Now, there's no limit to the number of people we can love. There's 7 billion people out there that we can love. Every one of them is an opportunity for us to experience the feeling of love. But as soon as we put some sort of expectation on what that person should do for us or how they should treat us or how they should love us back, and it's not fulfilled, we turn love into a source of suffering. All we have to do is learn how to get rid of our expectations and attachments. Then we can experience just the pure love that comes from giving the love, feeling the love flow from the universe through us towards another person.
Mm.
So that's the first stage, the love. You know, the wisdom is knowing the truth, knowing that we're spiritual beings. This world's a training ground for our soul, that we're here, that this isn't our eternal home, that this is just a place that we've come. It's like the gym for the soul. We come here to work out. We come here to polish the soul. And then eventually we return back to the spirit world. And the world that we will reside in, which I think you want to talk about that a little bit shortly, was about the different stages in the spirit world,
yes,
which is the stages of love. But so with the wisdom, though, we can understand the truth and we can live correctly because we understand who we are, why we're here, and that the most important thing is to develop our characters or our depth of our love. And the self-reflection is where we can sit down quietly. Not enough people, I think, in the world today actually take time out to sit down, close their eyes, look within, and check what's in their mind. See what thoughts are going around in their mind. After all, you are what you think about all day long. You know, if you've got happy thoughts all day long, you're a happy person. If you've got unhappy thoughts all day long, you're an unhappy person. So are we spending enough time to actually sit down, see what thoughts are going on in our mind? Now, based on the one before, which was wisdom, we can actually know what thoughts to look for and what sort of thoughts are going to bring us happiness and what thoughts are going to bring us unhappiness. The final stage, which is progress, is when we actually, through our self-reflection, when we recognize parts of ourselves that don't match the ideal, maybe the ideal that we've discovered through the wisdom that we've discovered through our studies and understanding, when we recognize the gap between our self now and our ideal self, then we make the effort to change ourselves towards that ideal. Now, when we do that, we feel happy because we always feel happy when we progress, actually anywhere in life. I'm learning to play the drums at the moment, and I'm really enjoying the fact that as time goes by and I put in the effort, I'm getting better and better. And feeling that experience of progress makes me feel really happy. Well, it's the same for the soul. The soul itself ultimately feels joy as it experiences itself progressing, becoming closer and closer to God. I mean, it's an eternal path. There is no end to this development, you know, but that's a wonderful thing. We have to learn to enjoy the process, enjoy being on the path. You know, don't think that once I'm here now, but once I get to here, I'll be happy. No, no. Instead of that, recognize that the path is eternal and learn to enjoy walking the path. And once we reach that progress, that state of we've progressed, when we go back to the beginning again of love, because we've progressed, we're now actually able to give a deeper love to more people. And our wisdom increases so we can understand truth more deeply. Our self-reflection increases. Ultimately, self-reflection is really about finding our true self, this divine nature that we have within, and then we progress some more. So it's actually a spiral, an eternal spiral, love, wisdom, self-reflection, and progress. And this is the fourfold path, the modern fourfold path as taught by Master Okawa, because you know any Buddha will give a new teaching, just doesn't rely on teachings of the past. Even I know, as you mentioned before, this teaching contains the essence of what we'll find in all teachings, but there is a new path that's been given, which is this modern fourfold path. Yeah.
So if we were to evaluate and compare and contrast the various religions, even the ones we've talked about, as well as the ones we haven't mentioned, that are that contain these elements. What is, I mean, well, I'm going to ask the question this way anyway. What is the, I'll call it, what's the end game of the happy science?
The end game is the creation of utopia, but it all starts with the individual. You know, as Master said, there's no magic wand that we can wave over the world and suddenly we've got utopia. Utopia starts with the mind of each individual. And this is the mission of happy science, is to teach each individual how to attain happiness for themselves. Mm-hmm. And when each individual in the world is attaining happiness for themselves, the world becomes a happy place. Right, so it starts from the individual. The individual then aims to spread that happiness to others. I mean, this is the wonderful thing, I think, in happy science. It explains clearly for us how to experience happiness ourselves, but it also teaches us that part of that happiness can come about also to deepen that happiness by actually sharing these ideas with other people and helping them become happy. Because, like I was talking about before, about love, the essence of love is giving, and it's actually you feel the greatest joy when you give love. So, for, you know, from our perspective, is that there's no greater joy and love that you can give than being able to help someone who's unhappy to help them become happy. You know, there's lots of ways to bring, you know, joy into the world and bring love into the world, but this is, for my personal belief, you know, the greatest joy we can do is when we find someone who may not be happy, or, you know, and we can help them find a way to become happy, help them change their mind from an unhappy mind into a happy mind, help people who are depressed to come out of their depression and become happy people. That's such a joy to be able to do that. So if each individual is concentrating on themselves through making the effort to study the teachings and follow the teachings, but definitely a part of the teaching is to teach people to actually now that you've learned that, it's important to help others as well and feel the joy that comes from that. So I believe that as this happens, and I do believe that this is going to happen, it's going to be a wave that happens in the world over a period of time. Now, whether it happens in the next 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, 200 years, 500 years, I don't know. That's up to all of us as humanity and humankind. But I do believe that because where these teachings are coming from, and because it's the intention of this great divine being for this to happen, that people will incarnate over and over again from the spirit world to bring this teaching to people, to spread it around the world. So this world is in the process. I mean, Master Okawa teaches we're about to enter the golden age. He's here to create the golden age. And it's through these teachings, understanding about why we are here. Then, as time goes by and people grasp this teaching, put it into practice, spread it to others, mm-hmm. I believe a great wave is going to happen, and this world will actually quite quickly change because, you know, we have the technology now. We have the communication now. And Master Okawa gives a lecture in Japan, and it's spread to locations all around the world. So, you know, hundreds of thousands of people can listen to this lecture all at once. Ultimately, millions or even billions of people could sit there listening to his words all at once. So our world's in the perfect situation that we have the technology now that once a teaching like this starts to take hold, we could actually change this world very, very quickly. And I believe that will happen. It's just a matter of when.
You know, it's interesting how the the aspect of our constitution, very few people have noticed this, and it came clear to me one day when I was conducting an interview with someone, and we were chatting about the various levels of bliss and joy and happiness, and it kind of dawned on me that in our Declaration of Independence, it talks about how, you know, we have the right to life, and we have the right to liberty. Those are, shall we say, givens. We have the right to those two. We don't have the right, and I find this fascinating that they wrote it this way. We, this, and I'm reversing what it says, but it but it says that we don't have the right to happiness, but we do have the right to the pursuit of happiness.
Interesting.
And I find that fascinating from the standpoint, what is it that they're trying to say there? I understand life, okay, our existence, because we're here, we have the right to it, and not to have it taken away by another person who also has the right to life.
When you say that, I can understand, though, why it's actually maybe it was an enlightened person that wrote that, because we do have the right to pursue to happiness, and if we pursue happiness, ultimately we should be able to find it. Mm-hmm. If we you know, if we look hard enough, I'm sure we can find the happiness once we understand the laws of cause and effect. But
sure.
If we say we have the right to happiness, it almost says that we can live however we like and mm-hmm. we will be happy.
Yeah.
But under the laws of cause and effect, it doesn't work that way. You know, if I'm living a negative life with causing a lot of destruction and a lot of problems around me, then even though I might be pursuing happiness, it doesn't necessarily guarantee me happiness. And I guess it's back to what you said before about sometimes, you know, wrong teachers and following the wrong path.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, we might be pursuing happiness, but if we're not on the right path, we're not going to experience happiness. So we don't so much have the right to happiness, and yet Master Okawa, I do remember he once said, though, that we do, not only do we have the right to be happy, we have an obligation to be happy. Right, we each have an obligation to be happy.
Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting.
And I know that, and I think that maybe at this point, I want to do two things here. Number one, I want to have you give me a definition, and then we're going to move into the levels of love.
Okay, great.
Define for me what is meant in the happy science by the word happiness. What is happiness?
Mm. The closest to happiness and happy science would be enlightenment. So for us, enlightenment and happiness are pretty much the same. So since enlightenment would be ultimately, at ultimate enlightenment, we'd be heading towards the mind of God. So for us, to attain happiness is to get closer and closer to the mind of God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is, you know, as a simple answer, That is really it.
But, and does Master Okawa explain why it's called the happiness science as opposed to the enlightenment science, or is that an issue of translation from Japanese to English?
No, because in Japanese it's Kofuku no Kagaku, which literally means, translated, would translate to science of happiness.
Okay.
So we could say, you know, it would be the science of enlightenment, but I think it's much clearer and easier for people to understand happiness than enlightenment. And, you know, since the two are actually very similar, your level of enlightenment would equate to your level of happiness in many ways, then, but happiness is really much easier to understand. You know, if I said to people, do you want to be happy? Do you want to, you know, are you pursuing happiness? Most people will understand happiness and what it means to pursue to be happiness. But enlightenment, it's not so clear. It's not so easy to understand. So I think that, you know, this is, I think that's the main reason why, you know, we would call it happy science. People can clearly, it's such a simple name, isn't it? Happy science.
It is.
We could turn it around and say it's the science of happiness.
Sure.
But that's just another word thrown in there. You know, happy science, which is really the science of happiness.
And what makes it real interesting is the fact that it brings to mind the command or the edict that we are to come to God, or whatever you wish to perceive that as little children, not childish, but childlike, and happiness, and being happy. I'll be honest with you, it's almost as if happiness is bred out of us as we grow older.
Isn't that so true? Young kids skipping down the road, you know, playing with the simplest thing, a little pebble. They get so much joy out of it, the tiniest little thing. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
They are so naturally happy.
Yeah.
Children are so naturally happy. And like you say, it gets knocked out of us. Well, life knocks it out of us.
Yeah.
But I believe that, you know, the reason for that is that we're born, you know, from the, like in Buddhism, teaches life is suffering. You know, if you imagine living as a life of a soul in the spirit world before we come here, where you don't have a body to look after, you know, we don't have to worry about eating. We don't have to worry about a house. You don't have to worry about a car. You don't have to worry about a job. You don't even have to worry about sleep. You don't have to worry about illness. You don't have all of these problems. All the problems, if you think about it, the issues that we have are really related to our physical body and the maintenance of a physical body. If you take away the physical body and just imagine yourself as being a spiritual being that can still think, that still has the same thoughts and mm-hmm. the same feelings and attitudes that you have now, but living in a world of light and energy where actually you don't have to sleep, so you have 24 hours a day, you can do whatever you like, all day, every day. because you don't need an income. You know, you don't have a physical body to look after. But the only reason you can exist is because this wonderful light energy that pours down from the top, from God. But if you're aware of this energy pouring down and it sustains your soul, and that's why you don't need anything, because this energy is always being given to you to sustain your soul, and you're really living on God's light, every day you'd be very grateful, because you'd be 100% aware that the only reason you're existing and the only reason you're alive is because there's light you're receiving from somewhere way up. Mm. And you don't really understand it, but just like looking at the sun, you're just aware that this light is giving you energy every day to live. So every day you'd be very grateful for that light, but you can just live. And what a joy. You can fly around. If your thoughts take you, I want to go over there. So your thought will take you there, because it's the realm of thought. Whatever you think happens. So compared to living in that world, when we're born into this world in a physical body, of course it's a world of suffering. Man, we've got this heavy body to lug around. We've got gravity. We've got illness. We've got pains. You know, we've got jobs we've got to have.
Mm-hmm.
Often we're doing work we don't even want to be working at, but we need the money. So it is, life is suffering. But actually, once we could understand the truth that's taught in Happy Science and we can find in the laws of the sun, what we discover is actually this is just a temporary realm. We're only going to be here for a short period of time. And that the whole thing has meaning, that what we're trying to do is understand the essence of the soul by being in this physical body. We're trying to understand, you know, it's almost like we can understand what we are for a while by being what we're not. You know, mm-hmm. by being in a physical body and being contained in this world, we can start to actually understand a little bit more deeply what is a spiritual life, you know, compared to a physical life. So there's so many life lessons, and also we get to understand is what is love and what it means to be courageous, for instance, you know, or let's think about giving, to be kind. You know, you could be in the spirit world and you could say, yeah, I'm kind. I'm a kind soul. My character is definitely kind, but how can you prove that when you're a spiritual being and you don't need anything and nobody else needs anything? You know, there's nothing you can do to be kind. But actually, once you're born into this physical world, you can prove that you're kind, because you can give somebody something that's yours. Mm-hmm. You can do something for somebody that puts yourself out. Yeah. You know, you can actually do kind acts in this world. It's very hard to do some of these things that you can do in this world where you actually show that you are truly kind or you're truly loving, because you in some way are putting yourself out and making, you know, your life more difficult in this world by giving something to somebody else.
Right.
Whereas, yeah, in the spirit world, it's very hard to do that because nobody really needs anything because everything's given. Yeah,
absolutely. If you've just joined us, we're talking with Steve Billingham. He is, put it in a little different vernacular here. He is a devotee of the Happy Science with Master Ryuho Okawa, and we are talking about not just the writings, in this case, the laws of the sun. We're going to talk about one source, one planet, one people, but we're also going to talk now about the various levels of love. And of course, I made the comment coming back from our last break, reading from 1 Corinthians about what love is and isn't in that context. But I have a feeling that it goes a little deeper than that. So I'm going to give you a few moments here to share with us about how many levels of love there are, and if we can, a brief description of each, and how will impact our lives as we share them, as well as receive them.
Yep. And I think this is one of the most, I mean, there's so many wonderful parts about the teachings of Master Okawa, but this teaching about the levels of love, it's also stages of enlightenment. So levels of love and stages of enlightenment of the soul are the same. But what he teaches basically is that this world we're living in is a three-dimensional world. This earth is a three-dimensional world. And what we have is souls that have incarnated from all the different stages of love, all the different dimensions beyond this world. So this three-dimensional earth, that's what makes this earth so incredible. You know, if you're in the other world, like attracts like. So you will actually be with like-minded people. So whatever stage of love you've actually reached, you'll be living in that level or stage of enlightenment. You'll be living in a stage with a similar-minded people, people who you get along with, people who are at a similar level to yourself, a similar way of thinking. But imagine all these different people from all these different ways of thinking and different stages of love have incarnated on this earth. And that's one of the reasons why this earth is, in one regard, so precious and such an incredible place to be, but in another regard, so difficult to be, because there's some people that you just can't believe that they would be thinking or acting that way. How could they be like that? But it's because everyone is at different stages. And I think we touched on this before, that everyone does have divine nature. So we have this equality idea. But everyone has also, through fair judgment, we've got to recognize different souls have reached different stages. But so these stages of love, we've got this fourth dimension, our third dimension that we live in now. Well, the next stage beyond the third is the fourth dimension, and that's the beginning of the spirit world. And in the fourth dimension, the level of love there is just instinctual love. And Master Okawa teaches that even animals, plants and animals and birds, you know, I don't know if you've ever had a bird build a nest outside your property where you've been able to watch it carefully, but the effort they go through to build a nest, have their eggs, sit on their eggs, feed their young, but it's all done instinctually. You know, the love of actually bringing up their offspring. So this is an instinctual level of love that happens throughout the world with all animals and plants. And when these animals and plants die, they go to this first stage or the next stage, which is the fourth dimension, the realm of instinctual love, or also called the astral realm often. Well, beyond that, the fifth dimension. The fifth dimension is really the beginning of heaven. And this is called fundamental love. And this love is just what we call love that gives. And this is people who have woken up to their spirituality. They've actually realized that I am a spiritual being. I really do have a soul. But they've also realized that just wishing good things on other people, having warm thoughts to other people, wishing happiness, I should say, on other people actually feels good. So it's just a real first stage of love. It's a fundamental love. And it's in Jesus when he said, love thy neighbor. It's that stage where the people live next door to you, there's no reason to love them other than you just, they're human beings and you hope they're happy. You go and buy your milk at the shop and you feel warmth towards the person that's serving you because you're grateful that they're there to give you what you want, you know, you're being served. And it's just that feeling of warmth to the people around you in society. This is a fifth dimensional love. The next stage of love, the sixth dimensional love, is a nurturing love. Because as Master Okawa said, in the fifth dimension, we're just wishing everybody was happy. But the next stage says, well, I want everyone to be happy, but what can I do to help people be happy? So this requires some level of intellect. So people who might study at university, or they might train up, become doctors, they might even become politicians with a true intention of bringing people happiness, business bosses, or some people in some way, they're managers or leaders in society, but somehow use their intellect to actually be able to make effort to be able to become somebody that can actually help other people. So it's nurturing. So this is the sixth dimensional love. He teaches beyond that is the seventh dimension, which is a realm of altruism. This is actually an angel's love. It's a love where it's a selfless love. And it's where people have actually discovered that thinking about themselves brings them no happiness at all. Actually, true joy comes from the actual living to serve, living for the happiness of other people, devoting yourself. If you'd ever think about your own happiness and how things are going for you, and you devote your whole life to thinking about other people and trying to bring happiness to them, strangely enough, the less you think about yourself and your own happiness, and the more you concentrate on bringing happiness to others, the happier you become. And this is the realm of the angels, people like Mother Teresa. A realm beyond that realm, he teaches, is the eighth dimension, which he teaches existence as love. And this is the realm of the archangels. And in this realm, great beings such as Lincoln, Edison, people who are born onto the Gandhi, you know, people who are born onto the earth, they see something from the other world that's not right. And they're generally born in a region, and they will change something about a region. And they actually are a manifestation, or they're a very high dimension, a real manifestation of God's love in the world as existence of love here from the eighth dimension. And the final realm of love of a human being, the ultimate realm that a human being can attain, is the realm which actually, you know, at this stage, Master Okawa said, you know, we haven't had any souls that have reached this realm because these souls, were already existing before they come into this earth. But it's the Savior's realm, love of God, the realm of the love of God. And it's the beings like Jesus and Moses, Confucius, Buddha, these great beings. And they've generally come to the world and they've brought, created religions for people to follow. They've really brought the mind of God, or the thoughts of God and the teachings of God into this world. So if we look at their structure, you know, it's actually, as I said before, it's like a pyramid structure. At the very top, there's very few of these very enlightened saviors, you could say. But then we move down to the archangels, and then, of course, there's, you know, less of them. What there is below them is the angels, you know, and then we enter the realm of nurturing love and the intellectual type realm. And then below that, where there's the fifth dimensional fundamental love, and then the fourth dimensional astral realm of instinctual love. But here's the wonderful thing, you know, all these souls existing within these different dimensions, even within one dimension, we could segregate the dimensions, right? So please don't think of one dimension like the fifth dimension, everyone's at the same level. Even within that fifth dimension, all the different souls are at different stages. Some might be at the top of the fifth, about to enter the sixth. But here's the thing, you know, many people say, so how can there be God if there's hell? You know, how can there be God if there's hell? Well, this wonderful teaching from Master Okawa, he teaches God didn't create hell. Human beings created hell. Because we ourselves have the same attributes as God, we have the same, essentially, nature as God, we are creative beings. Our negative thoughts, pardon me, our negative thoughts over a long period of time have actually, when people have left this world and have created negative minds, states of mind, they've started to dwell at the very bottom of the fourth dimension. So at the very bottom of that instinctual realm has been a realm of negative conceptual energy has been created through the dark thoughts of people on Earth, and that's been fueling it. But people have had those dark thoughts, they leave this world, they end up in that realm, and that's really the hell realm. And that's part of the mission of Happy Science too, is to change the way of people thinking, stop them falling there, and also stop people on Earth producing negative energy, which is fueling that realm. Yeah. So I know it's a brief description, but it is a description of this multidimensional structure of the spirit world that exists beyond this world.
Well, I think that folks may need to go back and re-listen to this segment of the program just so that they can fully comprehend it, because we're not going to sit here and rehash it over and over again. It's sort of like a laundry list of sorts, but each one has its respective purposes and so forth.
Yes.
I'm curious also about the spiritual life of a devotee of the Happy Science, and what roles prayer and meditation play?
Yeah, okay, so we have really three things: self-reflection, meditation, and prayer. Those are three important parts of being a devotee. But the main part of being a devotee is, first of all, exploration of the right mind. So right mind for us is, and when I say exploration of the right mind, you know, that's interesting, isn't it, the word exploration. So we have within us this diamond within, or we could say the mind of God or Buddha. We're trying to explore that mind and discover that mind and understand it more deeply and allow it to shine more and more. So that's the basis of it all. All the teachings are based on this exploration of the right mind. We're trying to discover this diamond within, polish this diamond, make it shine. That's really the essence of being a devotee in Happy Science, the exploration of the right mind. And as a method of the exploration of the right mind, we're given that fourfold path that I mentioned to you before, which is the practice of love, wisdom, self-reflection, and progress. So this really, the exploration of the right mind and the fourfold path, that is really the essence of being a devotee, and that's what we aim to practice every day. So in that regard, it's very simple, isn't it? You know, it's quite a simple teaching. Exploration of the right mind. And as a way of doing that, every day, practice love that gives, study the truth, self-reflect on yourself, and aim to progress and improve yourself every day, and help also create utopia while you're building your own true self up and improving yourself. The self-reflection, meditation, and prayer is also part of living a spiritual life. It's where we'll self-reflect on ourselves, which is the idea of self-reflection is actually preparing ourselves to be able to for prayer. The meditation is to calm the mind. So self-reflection, we look for any negativity, cut that off. Meditation is to really calm the mind and go deeply into a calm state of mind, so that our mind is now in the same wavelength as that of the heavenly world, so that we're now, our thoughts are actually going to reach the heavenly world and hopefully reach the high spirits. And then in prayer, our goal is actually to think, this is what I'd like to do, God. Please help me to do this for the world. I would like to do this for the world. You know, please help me to do this for the world. So prayer is really us telling God what we would like to do to help manifest his great goal of creating a beautiful utopian world. So, yeah, self-reflection, meditation, and prayer is an important part. But essentially, as a Happy Science devotee, we practice exploration of the right mind every day using the fourfold path of love, wisdom, self-reflection, and progress.
Well, I'm very excited about the prospects for the future with folks like yourself, as well as Master Ryuho Oikawa and the many writings in that regard. I'm curious, one final question in regards to the Happy Science. What, as he expresses it, is the source of all of this, we'll call it, divine information? And I guess what that is sort of leading to is that I have two books in front of me right now: The Laws of the Sun, as well as Messages from Heaven.
Yes.
These books are not considered, well, I guess that's kind of the question. Are these books considered divinely inspired? Do we have to have a reverence for them? We treat them as if we would treat, say, the Bible or the Quran or the other sacred writings of the other religions. Where does this information come from? And is it that which we store in our hearts that's important more so than the physical book itself or books?
Yeah. Look, well, personally, can I also mention where these books are available from?
Yes, please, go ahead.
So if anybody was interested in receiving, you know, The Laws of the Sun or Messages from Heaven or any of the other books, I mean, he's actually published 1,800 books now, over 1,800 books. 1,800 books, Richard. I mean, this is just phenomenal. But these are available from okawabooks.com, which is O-K-A-W-A, books.com, or from Amazon. The books are available there as well. So if anyone's interested in knowing more about the books, they could find them there. But to answer your question about them, whether I see them as being like divinely inspired or how I look at them, for me, and as Master Okawa, he himself said, the Laws of the Sun will become the scripture book for the world. So just as the Bible is the book in many ways for Christianity, that is the scripture, he teaches that over time, as this unfolds, the Laws of the Sun will become the scripture for the world. We will understand, we don't have time to go into this today, of course, but in the Laws of the Sun, we find about Genesis. You know, we discover about the very history, about even way, way, way back to the very, very beginning. And we're talking about so many millions of years ago. And the whole truth about how humans were created, the whole evolution, the whole past civilizations of Mu and Atlantis, and how we're the same people that went through those various civilizations. So, yeah, for me, this book, The Laws of the Sun, is absolutely a book to be revered. This is like my Bible. This is the book of truth that in the future, as people read it and understand it, everybody will understand very clearly how we were created, how the Earth was created, how the sun was created, how galaxies were created, and how everything was created from something higher. And here's an incredible thing, you know, when we talk of God, and as you said before, so where does this come from? Where does this come from? Well, I mentioned before that Master Okawa teaches that he's come from this consciousness in the ninth dimension, at the top of the ninth dimension, that is ultimately the consciousness that is responsible for this earth. But he teaches beyond the tenth dimension. When he looks beyond the tenth dimension, he sees a ten-dimensional consciousness, which is our earth. So our earth itself, as well as being a physical being, just as we have a physical body and a spiritual body, the earth has a physical body and a spiritual body. So he sees the spiritual body of the earth as a 10-dimensional being. And beyond that, he sees the 11th-dimensional being as our sun. And all stars themselves not only have a physical body that gives out the light energy that we can see with our physical eyes, but behind that, there's a spiritual being as well, with an existence, with a mission. The mission of the sun was to create the solar system. The mission of the earth was to create an environment where our souls could undergo our soul training. And as he carries on up, everything was created by something above it. So our sun is an 11-dimensional being, 12-dimensional galaxy. That was what created our sun. Beyond that, a 13-dimensional universe. Now, what he teaches is, at the moment, what scientists think is just this infinite universe, right? That's all there is. Master Okawa says, oh, no, this 13-dimensional universe that we live in is just one of many, 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 you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions or more of actual universes. And that the ultimate creator, the primordial God, the source of everything, is a 20-plus-something dimensional being. So if we imagine our universe, which is, and this takes me back to what you said before about when an astronaut now goes out into space and sees our Earth, suddenly the Earth becomes a tiny little place compared to before it was a flat plane that we were living on, right? Our perspective has changed as we come to understand more. This whole teaching that we can find in the Laws of the Sun makes our picture of the reality and of the truth so much bigger. Something where this universe, our universe is just one of maybe millions or billions of universes, and that this primordial God, the ultimate creator, is a 20-something plus dimensional being, way beyond human comprehension, but just to be able to imagine it is a starting point. So, yeah, this is what I love about the Laws of the Sun. On one regard, and the teachings of Master Okawa, on one regard, they take you out as far as you can go, way out from, you know, universe being a 13-dimensional consciousness to the primordial creator being 20-plus something. But on the other hand, it brings us down to the individual solving their everyday problems. And if you stop taking love and practice giving love without any attachments, you can live a happy life and stop suffering. And that's what I love about the teachings of happy science. It takes it from the tiniest minute detail of the individual and what causes suffering and how to get over your suffering all the way up to creation. Yeah, it's incredible.
And so you find happy science to serve you at this time in your life, to answer the questions that you have on your mind in your heart.
I have no questions whatsoever, Richard. And you know what? There is a wonderful saying in Buddhism, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. And so what it means is every day I still have to get up, I still have to go about, and I have to make the effort to do things sometimes I don't want to be doing. I still, you know, have my daily struggles. But that's the chop wood, carry water. Chop wood, carry water, yeah, but I'm still doing those same things, but my attitude towards it's changed. You know, I recognize my perspective has changed. I understand why I'm doing it and how I gain from it and how through pushing myself through these things and sometimes having the discipline to do things I don't want to do, I understand how that is actually training myself and training my soul and refining myself. And in my eternal soul, everything I do in that regard improves me in the long run and helps me develop. So it's all worth it. So it's really, yeah, through the enlightenment that I got from happy science, I still, in many ways, have to do the same things, but my perspective has changed, which changes everything.
Mm. Before we wrap up our program here, and again, I thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us from your perspective. The final three questions that I have for you are, number one, who is Steve Billingham?
Who is Steve Billingham? Thanks. Well, Steve Billingham, he's a Kiwi, originally from New Zealand, who is pretty much grew up as a person. I've always liked people. I've always found that I could get on well with people, but I had many questions about life, and I really just now want to live my life trying to bring happiness to other people, because I know that in turn I experience a joy from that myself. So I look at myself as pretty much an ordinary person who woke up to the teachings of truth and really just want to make the most of my life. That's Steve Billingham, yeah.
What is it that you, and you've sort of answered this, but I'll ask it anyway, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
You know, Master Okawa teaches, when we leave this earth, one of the things that happens is one of the first things that happens once we finish our lives is we reflect. We get to see our lives as played by a movie. It might only last the equivalent to somewhere like a half an hour. We can watch our whole life in front of us. I want to, when I leave this life, I want to be able to reflect on my life and feel happy about the life I lived. You know, when I see my movie, I want to feel happy that yes, I left this earth and it was, I did what I could. Yeah.
And finally, who inspires you?
Well, there's a lot of people that inspire me. You know, there's a lot of people around me that inspire me. People I work with inspire me. Anybody who I really see making an effort to bring light into the world, to improve the world in some way, people who don't think of themselves and think of others, they all inspire me. But and many of the great leaders of the past, they inspire me. But on top of them all, nobody inspires me more than Master Okawa, because I just see what he's achieving. It's just, I see how much work he does. I see how hard he works. I see, it's like I said, it was 1994 I found this movement, but he started in 1986. And he has been so consistent throughout that time. Absolutely incredible, from starting Happy Science to two schools have been created in Japan. There's a Happy Science University has just opened in Japan last month. There's the Happiness Realization Party, which is a political party because he's aiming to teach ideal politics. He inspires me so much because I just see what he does. What he does in a day, I think I might be lucky to achieve in a year. Actually, no, more than that, maybe 10 years. He's just incredible. My greatest inspiration is Master Okawa and his consistency and his enthusiasm and his achievements. Yeah. Mm.
Well, Steve Billingham, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's been a pleasure to talk with you today and share these concepts and this philosophy of the happy science through the writings of Master Okawa and, in particular, the laws of the sun. One source, one planet, one people. Again, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Oh, well, thank you, Richard. I really, really enjoyed this time with you today. Thank you very much.
The Laws of the Sun, One Source, One Planet, One People. And Steve Billingham, again, thanks so much for joining us. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.